Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's that time of the week again when we visit with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Newton. Q&A with Layla. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Oh, great, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good. How are you withstanding the cold?
Getting through. I've got my Nanook of the Winter hat.
Yeah. Well, actually, both of us, we converged in the office, and we noticed that both of us had our Nanook of the North hats on, and a mighty attractive pair we are. In fact, I think we may upload a photo. Folks, you cannot imagine the difficulty that I had to get Layla to pose for this absurd photo of us doing our podcast wearing our Nanook of the North hats and scarves. And no, we're not so poor that we can't pay the heating bill at the Hoffman Center where we recorded this podcast. But we were just, it's all in good fun.
Yeah.
And I hope that, Layla, you weren't too humiliated. So, on the agenda for this week, actually, we're very hopeful that our new website will come up next week. So keep checking because we're going to go from our old sort of 1999 type format. You know, we're going to party like it's 1999 to our new 2014 format, which takes advantage of social media and connectivity, and there'll be lots of great ways to communicate intelligent medicine. And we have some great contributors, you being one of the top contributors, but also such distinguished individuals as Dr. Stephen Sinatra, Dr. Teitelbaum will also be one of the contributors, Dr. Leo Galland, and we're going to keep providing fresh content. So that's going to be great. We also really did some cool podcasts this week. We talked to Dr. Daniel Amen. You've heard of the Amen Clinics?
Yes.
And did you see any of those PBS specials?
Yes, I did.
He's a very interesting guy and he's a great communicator. And he's really is getting the idea across that we can optimize our brain health. And that even if we have brain disorders, he deals with a lot of athletes who've had concussions, vets who've had IED injuries, and we can rehab our brains. And he takes pictures using a SPECT scan. It's very fascinating. We talked to him. Also, Dr. Mark Houston, very cool. He had some very interesting things to say about niacin. He believes that niacin is still valid for cardiovascular prevention, notwithstanding some negative studies that were in mainstream medicine. And I'll be talking about it in detail on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine on the radio. But the main point that he made was that niacin is the reason they said it wasn't going to work is they couldn't commercialize it. They couldn't combine it with a patentable synthetic ingredient to make it saleable, because you can buy niacin virtually anywhere. They wanted to soup it up and make it patentable and expensive, and it crashed and burned because what they combined the niacin with to get rid of the flushes was harmful to the cardiovascular system.
Oh,
so,
well,
yeah. So anyway, so he has it, makes that point. Also, he provides, and I'm not going to. This is a spoiler alert. I'm not going to give away the goods on this important nutrient that helps to prevent flushing. There's a nutrient you can take that virtually abolishes flushing. It's a real clinical pearl. We also talked to Jacqueline Chassie, who's a naturopath, who talked to us about pregnancy and preconceptual planning. That's an important area. You know, deciding the optimal nutrition, detoxification, and infertility, which is a big problem for a lot of couples. So those podcasts are at drhoffman.com/podcast. And then there's our newsletter that you just sent out. And your contribution was on what?
Getting ready for pregnancy.
Oh, okay.
Getting ready for pregnancy.
Okay, great, great. Yeah, so right on the same theme.
Mm-hmm.
And my contribution was on, I decided to pick an interesting question, the breakfast controversy. Because if you ask, you know, a group of people, there's something, just swear by breakfast. They say, I need a hearty breakfast. I get up and eat a hearty breakfast. That sets the tone for the whole day. And other people say, no, breakfast's not very, I wait. And I have a very late meal or something very light.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what's the right answer? What is the correct approach?
It's different strokes for different folks.
I agree.
Those who have blood sugar issues need a good protein fat breakfast to stabilize all that. Other people who are, when trouble starts, as soon as they've had breakfast, I would question if they have food allergies or other things, or just choosing the wrong breakfast.
Right. It's just, if they feel blown away by their breakfast, then it's either blood sugar or it's an allergy to a certain food. In the, like, the most common things you have for breakfast are wheat and dairy repetitively, and people feel
lunch and dinner too.
Once they have breakfast, they're gonzo. It's like they're fine until they fast and they feel fine. And then they get blown away by breakfast. So actually, I also include some information about exercise there, and the relationship between exercise and timing of breakfast. There's some interesting new data on that. So that's our newsletter, and you can get that via radioprogram@AOL.com, which is, you know, just ask for the newsletter and we'll subscribe you, which also happens to be the way that people can pose their questions.
Yes.
So the way that we get questions, we get some of them off my Facebook page, and some of them we get through, rarely do we get anything through snail mail.
That's true. No.
Occasionally we'll, I mean, I gotta say, it's getting to be obsolete. Occasionally we see a very poorly scrawled message through someone with a very palsied hand who is asking a question with a self-addressed stamped envelope. That's a real relic of the 20th century.
Right.
Send me an answer. No, so what we're doing is radioprogram@AOL.com. Send us your question. We can't answer everything because time is limited, but we will consider your question for answering it during one of our weekly podcasts. Then the price you pay, it's free, but the price you pay is you'll have to listen to our entire podcast to see if we're answering your question. And something very important is happening on February 2nd, 2014. Do you know what that is?
No.
So you're probably the only person in North America who does not know what's happening on Sunday, February
2nd. Oh, is it 2nd. The Super Bowl?
Wrong.
Oh, no.
No. Of course it's the Super Bowl. It is the Super Bowl. But it is also even more important than that, because the Super Bowl is not of universal appeal. But February 2nd is the day when I am moving my Facebook page from a personal page to a professional page, which will enable discussion and facilitate communication. And so
more traffic.
Yeah, and absolutely. So it's moving day for me will be the day before, so that I can relax and watch the Super Bowl the next day. But I'm moving everything over. And so, you know, friends and relatives and, you know, all goofy stuff I'm going to leave on my personal page. And you're welcome to friend me there. But I'm going to move all the medical content over to facebook.com/drRonaldHoffman. Before it was Private Citizen Ronald Hoffman. So now it's going to be Dr. Ronald Hoffman on Facebook. So go there, like it, and then you'll get all the content. Otherwise, one of these days, they're going to say, what happened to this guy? He dropped off the face of the earth. All he's posting is goofy birthday pictures and, you know, no more medical content. No, it's going to be a Dr. Ronald Hoffman on Facebook. If you follow me on Facebook, but I put up a lot of stuff there. For some people, it's just a big time suck. You know, it's a waste. You know, who needs to be on Facebook? But actually, we communicate a lot of useful information there. So, all right. We got, before we get into questions, is big story this week. I'm holding in my hands the New England Journal of Medicine and two very disappointing studies on hot potential cures for Alzheimer's disease. They've spent millions, if not hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in a quest for cures for Alzheimer's disease. So in this issue, they have articles about two promising new drugs, and they both crashed and burned.
Oh.
They have esoteric names. Solanezumab probably cost a fortune, because these are mAb drugs, or they're monoclonal antibodies. If this drug doesn't cost $50,000 a year, I would be amazed.
Wow.
Maybe I'm being, you know, overly optimistic.
Creative, but who will afford it? Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work. Also, bapinezumab also crashes and burns, doesn't work. So I gotta say, look, I wish that they could come up with a high-tech cure, but We have so many things in the natural arsenal, and just this week, juxtaposed with this headline that these drugs aren't working, fish oil helps to prevent brain shrinkage, mm-hmm. and the white matter is preserved. So that's number one. And then, of course, a couple of weeks ago, it was vitamin E, but at a high dose, 2,000 international units. So, I mean, what better vindication
Absolutely.
Of supplementation can there be than, you know, we're not making progress on the conventional side in Alzheimer's, but there are supplements, there are lifestyle choices that we can mm-hmm. make to prevent this disease. Mm-hmm. So
we have to remember that Alzheimer's is being referred to as type 3 diabetes. As such, it's beneficial to be in ketosis. The brain is going to prefer ketones over glucose. That's very helpful. Coconut oil is also helpful.
Yes.
Coconut oil has been in clinical trials. That's where Dr. Mary Newport found out about it and administered some coconut oil to her husband.
We've got to get her on the air, but
there's
been some sort of cockamamie snafu where I try to get through and then I don't mm-hmm. know what's going on. But
okay.
She's really got an amazing story to tell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so you know, we're not going to go through all the natural therapies here for Alzheimer's because we do that frequently here on Intelligent Medicine. But just the point to be made is, you know, unfortunately, the conventional approach, expensive, high-tech, lots of side effects, not happening. The alternative approach, relatively inexpensive, minimal side effects, studies that show benefits, true benefits. So that's exciting. All right.
Yes.
Questions.
I have one. Dear Dr. Hoffman, this is from Martine. I catch you on Intelligent Medicine. I thank you very much for it. She says, my present problem is plantar fasciitis. I tried physical therapy, special orthotics to no avail. I appreciate any help from you. I've had this for 4 months. I blamed it on too much Zumba, which I stopped completely.
Right, right.
Please help. Martine.
Okay. So sometimes I speak on issues theoretically, because fortunately I'm blessed with very good health, and I'll tell you what's good for strokes and what's good for heart attacks and what could be good for cancer, and thank goodness I've not had any of those problems. Ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, those kinds of things. But when it comes to plantar fasciitis, I've been there and I've done that. And it is a very devastating condition. And part of the reason that I developed it is from, I think, overuse. You know, instead of Zumba, I was doing a lot of running
mm-hmm.
In preparation for triathlons, and I loved to run, and I was heartbroken when I started to develop such severe heel pain. It's particularly bad when you wake up. You know, you get up, you take that first step, you know, to get up, and you get the searing pain in your heel. And that's a hallmark mm-hmm. of plantar fasciitis. It generally gets better through the day. Some people are so debilitated that they can't even walk all day, you know, so they're in terrible pain. So I had a mild to moderate case, and painkillers are of no use. I mean, they might blunt the pain, but they're not going to make it go away.
What about that method of sticking your foot into a bucket of ice for 20 minutes? Is that...
That's very interesting that you talk about that, because that's actually going to be one of the themes on my radio show this weekend, is cold treatment for pain, because, I mean, I didn't plan to get off on this little segue, but let me introduce it. Cryosaunas are being... popularized. They already have them in Europe, but they have one in Philadelphia, and they're going to franchise these things. A cryosauna is kind of the opposite of a sauna. It's where you go in with your whole body, and it is so unbelievably cold that you can last for about 2 or 3 minutes in it. It's cooled with liquid nitrogen, and they give you special protective clothing and little coverlets for your ears and your nose, and maybe some other parts of your body that might get really cold. I'm not going to go there. But it is being used to treat fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, certain types of autoimmune pain, chronic regional pain syndrome. A whole variety of things seem to respond. And it's based on this old idea of, if you've ever been to an upscale spa, they have sauna, steam room, they've got the, you know, everything, jacuzzi, but they also have a cold immersion tub. And athletes know about that. You literally see NFL football players God bless him. After a game, you know, running back, he gets tackled like, you know, 25 times, you know, tremendous amount of concussion at the line of scrimmage. And they go to these ice baths. And they sit in these ice baths. I don't know how they bear it. But this makes an ice bath seem like, Warm Springs, Georgia, by comparison. This is very, very cold temperatures. So, look, there's something to it. And this is, I did that as part of my rehab. I did ice it. I got a Dixie cup, and I, you know, there's little Dixie cups, and I put water in them, and I put them in the freezer, and I would just pull one out. And while I was watching TV, I would ice it. And then also I didn't do physical therapy because, I don't know, just seemed like time-consuming. I knew what to do. There's certain exercises you can do. I also used cock-up splints for the heel that keep the heel in a flexed position. Mm-hmm. In other words, like an L-shaped position. Because when you extend the leg and it becomes more, you know, instead of an L, like more like a straight line, that's not good for the plantar fascia. So you actually want to stretch. I did stretching exercises. The exercises I did were stretching of the calf, and I stretched against a wall repeatedly, and I did various things to keep the... It's really about tightness along the whole line of your calves, the bottom of your foot, and the fascia around your heel. And so there's certain exercises you can do while sitting. You cross your leg and you flex your foot and you pull back on it. And sometimes you can massage with your finger deep into the fascia in the arch of your foot. I also took up something called MELT. MELT method uses balls of various hardness to massage your feet. And I did that very religiously.
How did that work for you?
I thought it was really beneficial, and I recommend it highly.
You're running again.
God bless, you know, here's the sound, knock wood, I am running again, and I'm being a little cautious because I don't want to court a recurrence of this, but when I had it, I thought, this is the end, I'm not going to be able to resume my running. The other day, I did a 6-mile run, great, no problem, and so this is, you know, I really think I'm clear of it, but I had to cut back on running, and I cross-trained. I did a lot of swimming. I did cycling, which puts less pressure on the heel. Mm-hmm. I have been taking anti-inflammatory supplements to beat the band.
Let me guess. Curcumin, Boswellian,
yes.
Fish oil.
All of those.
Any Caprex in there or anything?
Caprex, yes. Mm-hmm. But Caprex is a hops-based anti-inflammatory. Also, I took Wobenzyme quite a lot.
Yeah.
And that... requires
about 12
some,
a day?
It takes dedication because you have to take it in between meals. So you have to remember to take it between meals. Mm-hmm. And I took three or four times a day, really push that. Mm-hmm. That's anti-inflammatory. Lots of fish oil, of course. And you know.
This cryo sauna, getting back to this for a minute.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, that's got to also be great for brown fat.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
What a great way to get brown fat.
Oh, it's one of the indications for weight loss, too.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely, because there's a lot of research now on how it was thought that only babies had brown fat, mm-hmm. and that adults lost the brown fat. Now, we have tiny deposits of brown fat. That's fat-burning fat.
It's got mitochondria in it.
Which actually rev the metabolism. It's good fat. And we can promote that fat by exposure to cold. So, you know, what you can do so you can't afford to or find a cryo sauna is you can apply a large, ice pack between your shoulder blades for a half an hour a day. That sounds kind of unpleasant. Or you can sit in your, underwear in a meat locker. Or, these days we could just, open the windows here in New York.
The brown fat is what we burn without shivering.
Yeah.
That's the difference, right, mm-hmm. between brown fat and white fat, which is the fat
yes.
most of us are walking
and
around with.
And why it was thought we lost it as babies is because babies can't shiver. We acquire the ability to shiver. So it was thought that brown fat was the mechanism that allows thermoregulation or temperature regulation for babies who don't have the ability to shiver. Shivering apparently is like, releases a lot of energy mm-hmm. that warms the body when it's getting too cold. So, I mean, it's not just, there is a reason for shivering. It's actually beneficial to shiver. Mm-hmm. We just don't want to get there. It's pretty unpleasant. So, yeah, we're going to talk a little, That will be a theme. I want to do some more discussion and programs about cryosaunas and cryotherapy in general, because I think that's a whole revolutionary new area. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. I think Dr. Oz may have touched upon it in one of his episodes, but so that'll be important. So anyway, long story short, you can overcome this. What some people have to do with the plantar fasciitis is they sometimes have to get a steroid injection. Mm-hmm. That can help. I did not. I resisted that. I did go to a foot doctor. The foot doctor said, let's be very conservative. Oh, orthotics were important. And, you know, I changed my shoes so that to accommodate the orthotics. Mm-hmm. The other thing that they can do is they can do there's a type of therapy that's used to smash kidney stones called lithotripsy. Lithotripsy is a form of shock wave therapy, ESWT, external shock wave therapy. You can Google that. That is a form of therapy for plantar fasciitis, and it is of some degree of benefit to patients.
Wow.
So, and there's new research, and I don't know how valid this is, and it sounds a little extreme, that shows that radiation therapy can be helpful for this. Now, you think of radiation therapies for cancer or something.
Yeah.
That's a little much, but, you know, with the new techniques of radiation therapy, if somebody's just really up against it and nothing is helping, this might be worth looking into. And there's also a brand new therapy that is being pioneered at NYU here in New York, but it's going to be around all over the country, which is a treatment for tendonitis. And it has proven very successful in golfer's elbow or tennis elbow. Bicipital tendonitis, it's called. And it can also be applied to plantar fasciitis. I think the research is a little new on it. I forget what the name of that therapy is, but listeners can email me. I will discuss it. I've discussed it briefly on a recent podcast. The name escapes me right now. But this therapy can be helpful. Is it a surgical therapy? Well, you have to open it, but it's a very tiny incision, and there's a little probe that's put into there, and it's actually through sound therapy, like an ultrasound wave, that you break up some of the stiffened, inflamed fascia, and you sort of clean it up. It's a very precise technique done with a very tiny probe, and I met a guy in the gym who'd had terrible tennis elbow, and this guy said, you know, I don't believe in God, but I believe in this procedure.
Wow.
No, pretty dramatic statement from, I guess, an atheist. But, it was so remarkable, the relief that he got after, I think he had just one treatment. And it's brand new, and it involves some very, high-tech machinery that hospitals, I think, will soon acquire. But I think it's going to really revolutionize the treatment for tennis elbow and plantar fasciitis. But I got to say that I think it's better to treat it naturally to allow the body to heal on its own. And thank goodness I didn't need any kind of heavy-duty medical therapy. It was all, sort of natural therapy and physical rehabilitation through orthotics and exercises. So, I'm not out of the woods yet because, you just got to be careful. I'm going to try and train prudently and listen to my body this time.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Okay, next question. This is from Shireen. She writes, I've been on Weight Watchers. Initially, I had problems losing, then the diet kicked in, and now I can't stop losing. I'm 5'5 at 121 pounds and still losing weekly. Honestly, I have increased my calorie intake, but it doesn't help.
Wow.
She says, I don't throw up and my appetite is good.
Wow.
I had a CBC recently done, including thyroid, but the endocrinologist said results were normal.
Right.
Any advice what I can do next? Well, stop doing the diet.
it should only be, it's like some of these commercials that I hear on the radio that are outlandish that say, this diet pill is so effective that if you lose too much weight, cut back to just one every other day.
You sound like that guy.
I know. But, you know, and that really makes you think, like, whatever that is, I'm going to get some of that. Yeah. And I'm going to take 10 of those pills.
Right.
Because people have such trouble losing weight. So here's someone who had trouble, now is not having trouble. Apparently their metabolism switched.
And if she went to an endocrinologist and everything is normal, right, it could still be that she's not taking in enough calories, possibly.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to increase your calories by eating more celery and carrots than you were previously on the diet. You want to be able to eat calorically dense foods.
Yeah.
That would include nuts and seeds, of that nature.
If she hadn't seen an endocrinologist, I would say, you know, maybe something's wrong. Maybe the thyroid is too fast. Maybe she's gone into hyperthyroid state. Or, you know, God forbid, you know, sometimes people persist in losing weight. They need to get, colonoscopy or a CT scan of the abdomen or an upper GI, you know, make sure nothing bad is going on.
Right.
But she doesn't report feeling sick or having a change in bowel habits or, you know, having
nausea.
She says her appetite
is good, you
know, it's, well, look, I mean, the other thing is, you know, certain times in life, one changes body type. You know, going through menopause, you can either get fatter or you can get frail.
Yes. We don't have her age here, but, you know, at 5'5", 121 pounds, which is perfect.
Yeah.
Don't need to go any further than that.
Yeah.
Again, I would just revisit. Maybe you need to bring back some good carbs or something.
And stay away from those well-meaning relatives who express a lot of concern, like, oh, my God, you've lost a lot of weight. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Or, alternatively, go to, you know, China or something, and, you know, where everybody's lighter and thinner. You know, you'll blend right in.
There's McDonald's there. Don't forget.
You know, obesity is a huge problem in those countries.
Yeah.
You know, they just issued a world report saying that starvation and hunger is no longer the prime nutritional problem in the world. It is now officially overnutrition.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there are pockets of hunger, no question. Yeah. Terrible pockets of hunger, millions, tens of millions. But for the most part, even in the developing world,
it's
overnutrition and poor quality nutrition and sedentary lifestyle causing prediabetes and obesity.
Mm-hmm.
You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
They have really caught up to us.
Wow. Okay. Oh, we have another question here. This is from Brad. Dr. Hoffman, my wife is on Fosamax, 10 milligrams once a day for osteopenia. You recommended strontium citrate on your show. Could this replace the Fosamax? If so, how many milligrams, how often?
Yeah.
She also takes 1,200 milligrams of calcium with vitamin D.
Well, you know, I don't want to supplant this person's medical care. It's not right for me to do this on the radio broadcast, but I will tell you that that's something we often do, is that we take patients who are on medication and we say, okay, medication's not doing the job or the side effects are unacceptable, or you reach a diminishing returns on that category of medication, Fosamax, Beneva, Actonel. Generally, they're window of efficacy is anywhere from 4 to 6 years, and beyond that, there is a tendency to gain less bone, but also to diminish the quality of the bone. So the suggestion is, if you've been on it for a while, you perfectly safely change to strontium. It has a different mode of action, and whatever gains you obtain from the medication you will retain, and you'll get the additional benefit of strontium, which is bone strengthening and thickening.
Yeah. Also, I want to talk about the calcium. 1,200 milligrams may or may not be a lot. You know, we're a little bit afraid of calcium now, especially where there's no vitamin K.
Right.
We want to make sure you're getting vitamin K.
But I hear Dr. Oz from, this is secondhand. I don't, you know, I haven't spoken to him or seen this, but people are telling me that Dr. Oz now recommends that people stop taking calcium.
Completely.
Yeah, but I think that is a mistake.
I
really think that the studies are suggestive but inconclusive as to the effects of high doses of calcium on the arteries. That's a big concern, is that the calcium doesn't go to the bones where you want it, it goes to the arteries. And there are actually some studies that still show that calcium up to a certain point is protective against osteoporosis and beneficial. So to say no calcium, I think is premature.
Yeah.
And you know, if you give it properly with adequate vitamin D and vitamin K, that'll help it go to the right places.
Right, and magnesium as well.
Yes.
Very, very important.
I think this refers, I think, to the Tums era, you know, which was simplistic. We would say, oh, you've got osteoporosis, start sucking on Tums all day long.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get tons of calcium without any of the cofactors. And, of course, that was going to, you know, create an unbalanced state.
Right, right. So I would reduce that calcium, make sure there's adequate vitamin D, vitamin K, and magnesium. It's good to check for DHEA.
Yep.
DHEA sulfate is the blood test.
Yep.
If you go to your practitioner.
Very beneficial for bone if you are a candidate for it. And vitamin, the latest, vitamin E. There are some new studies suggesting that vitamin E for bone offers, approximately, I think it was a 11 or 14% bone augmenting effect, even with what we consider an inferior form of vitamin E, which is the alpha tocopherol. I think it was 400 international units, and it was beneficial. So think if you use the mixed tocopherol, gamma tocopherol, makes sense because it's anti-inflammatory. Maybe that's how it works.
Oh, another very important point, strength training.
Oh, yeah.
Cardio is great, walking is fine, but we really need to challenge our bodies more. You want to get on the floor and do push-ups, you want to do squats, you want to do lunges at the very least, but a strength training program 3 times a week is very, very beneficial for bone health. And we make sure that we don't become feeble as we get older. We can also keep away sarcopenia, which is the diminishment of muscle.
You know what is a cool exercise that I'm doing a lot these days is the plank.
Oh, yeah. I love the plank.
How long can you do the plank for?
There's
two ways. One is straight arm, like a push-up.
Yep.
And the other
one
is...
That one I could hold longer, but this one on the forearms?
Right, on the forearms.
On the forearms, I could hold that. I'll do it 3 or 4 times, and I'll hold it for 30 seconds each time.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good because your hands start shaking.
Yeah, I'm shaking at 20 seconds, but I just hang on.
It's reassuring.
Unless my back is getting involved.
Right, well, because it's good for the core, too. It keeps the back strong, too. Because
you stand up straighter.
Right.
Yeah.
But then there's also the side plank.
Yes.
That's kind of cool, where you go
that's
and you, you mm-hmm. lean and your hands up in the air. That's a cool little exercise to do. So, those are some things that are good for the spine and for the bones.
They say, I've read that, if you have no time for any exercise at all, just go do the plank.
Okay.
Yeah. Except for
you
need
to do
lower
office.
Body, too.
We can do that in the office.
You can do that in the office.
You can walk across my back while I do it. just don't jump up and down.
Okay.
All right. So any other? Yeah, we have more questions.
We have a question. This is from Christine. I would greatly appreciate your help, Dr. Hoffman. I recently went to the ophthalmologist and was told that I have posterior vitreous detachment in my right eye. My left eye is fine. I had the 4-week follow-up, and there is no indication of retinal tears or detachment. I have no loss of vision, but I do have floaters and watery vision out of that eye. I'm now taking bilberry. Okay. I asked the ophthalmologist about various known eye support supplements like lutein, etc., but was informed not to take them.
Okay.
Okay.
So here's my take on this.
This person is an alternative practitioner herself.
Herself.
So, yeah, she was very
She was nonplussed by that.
Exactly.
Okay, so here's the thing. Let me answer in two segments. Number one, I cannot tell you of any specific nutrient that is going to make your retina not detach. I mean, it may be the case that good nutrition prevents that.
Don't sneeze too hard.
Clearly there may be a nutritional correlate to that, but we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. So, take your supplements, etc. If you have bleeding in the eye due to a retinal tear, maybe it's time to cut back on things that thin the blood. Okay. Now, second part is what that ophthalmologist said, which is very ignorant and biased against supplements, because he said, look, if you do not already have eye problems, you don't need to bother to take bilberry, lutein, DHA, zinc, selenium, taurine, lutein and zeaxanthin, all the things that we know prevent macular degeneration. So that is, I got to say, that's dumb.
It is. And you just hit the nail on the head, because she says that the ophthalmologist's reasoning was that these supplements are good for those only who are much older and deficient.
Much older.
She herself is 60.
60.
She's in good health.
Yeah.
But again, that's...
So what do you do? Do you wait till someone has problems with the amsellar grid and they're going towards blindness and then you can institute these things? That doesn't make sense. I really think it's important to take these nutrients, either obtain them in your diet from fish, egg yolk, green leafy vegetables. Mm-hmm. Augment yourself with selenium and zinc. You can get those, if you like, from dietary sources. The time that you really need to amp it up, of course, is when you're beginning to have early changes. But if you have a family history of this, or particularly if you are a white woman, especially with blue or green eyes, you're much more susceptible to macular degeneration. And that might be a population.
Really?
Yeah. It's actually, if you look at the stats, African-American men are, you know, they got a lot of problems, but they have far less macular degeneration than the opposite group, which is light-skinned Caucasian women with blue or green eyes. Because there's something about the protective effects of dark pigment in the eye and being a male that somewhat protects you against early onset. Now, this is not to say that African-Americans get a lot of diabetic retinopathy. That's a different kind of retina, which is treatable through bilberry and omega-3 fatty acids and just avoidance of diabetes.
Yes.
This is the opposite of preventive medicine. It's like, wait till there's a problem and then begin treatment? No, that doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So,
yes, that's like the case of you either have diabetes or you don't. Forget about that gray area where most of us are walking around.
Yeah.
Okay. So we would say to Christine, take the supplements, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's bleeding, in which case, easy on the fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
Is that our list of questions for? No.
I have one more.
Oh, please.
I do have one more.
We have more time.
Let's see here. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Hi, Layla. I hope that you're both doing great. I want to ask you what basic supplements and their dosages and foods should a woman take who's considering starting a family? It's not happening just yet, but just to get my body ready.
Wow.
I understand that it may be a good idea to have a checkup, ascertain any vitamin deficiencies or any other abnormalities prior to becoming pregnant, but I'm not sure that's in the plan just yet. If vitamin D is low, should a woman continue supplementation while pregnant? What would be a safe dose? This is from Alice.
Well, I would refer Alice, we were going to answer her question, but I would refer Alice to an entire podcast of about 40-some minutes in duration that I did this week with a naturopathic physician whose specialty this is, which
Wonderful.
Is preconceptual planning, getting ready for pregnancy, dealing with pregnancy issues, dealing with postpartum, but also dealing with infertility. She works with a lot of infertile couples trying to enhance egg quality and sperm motility. And so let's talk about some of these considerations, because this is actually the basis of your column in the Intelligent Medicine newsletter this week.
Yes, I give an overview of Alice's question, and I answer it to the degree possible in the newsletter.
Okay.
But first thing, Alice, make sure if you're not already at a healthy weight, you want to get to a healthy weight. Absolutely. Go get your regular checkup. Find out if there are any micronutrient deficiencies and so forth. Take care of them. We would be interested to know what your vitamin D level actually is. Another thing you may want to undergo, and I think this is a really good idea. You tell me what you think, Dr.
Yep.
Hoffman. Check your levels of toxic metals like lead and mercury. The way to do this is not with a blood test. It's with the urine toxic metal test. Why? Because these toxic metals don't hang out in our bloodstream, in our circulation. They're in our brains, in our muscles, in our bones, everywhere else, and they need to be provoked. When you do a urine toxic metal test, you're actually given a provocating agent. So then we're able to tell, really, how much you're actually storing. This is the better way to do it. And if you do this before you get pregnant, it's appropriate to go through a detoxification. It could take 6 months. It might take a year. You're not quite ready to get pregnant yet. This would all be appropriate to do now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I discovered in my conversation with Dr. Jacqueline Chassie is that the 4 months prior to conception are of critical importance, because it takes about 4 months for an egg to mature from the time it first develops, and it takes about 4 months for a sperm to mature. So whatever you're doing during that 4 months, it has an impact on the quality of the egg or the quality of the sperm. So if you're smoking cigarettes, if you're exposed to a toxin, pesticides, mm-hmm. too much automobile exhaust, sitting in a traffic jam, on the Cross Bronx Expressway, commuting to work, this may have subtle or lasting impacts on the sperm and on the egg, and thus on the child. But here's the scary part: is these are called epigenetic changes. Epigenetic changes. I mean, you have your genes, so it's like if you've got good genes from your father and mother, great. But toxins in the environment change the expression of genes. In other words, you may have a gene that slightly predisposes you to diabetes, but it can be modified to amp it up to increase the likelihood of diabetes. Or perhaps it's an autism gene, or it's a, you know, ADD gene, or something that can create a problem. It will be changed for the baby. But here's the scary part. It may be changed for 4 or 5 subsequent generations.
Wow.
Because the DNA can get passed along from you to your grandchildren to your great-grandchildren if it's modified epigenetically by something bad in the environment. So this is a, you know, really, really consequential time. And I think, you know, people need to reflect on, you know, what are they doing prior to conception? Look, people have conceived for millions of years without a lot of thought and a lot of planning. But there's also been a lot less out there in terms of pollutants and potentially toxic habits. You know, should you smoke marijuana? Should you be having a, you know, a 3-martini dinner? These are considerations, especially during that critical period.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, toxicity is an issue. One of the things that might be worthwhile doing is get a test called the MTHFR test, which is a test to see how you metabolize B12, folic acid, and B6. If you've got problems there, it's it sort of increases the need for folic acid in pregnancy. Can you begin to take these things beforehand? I would start loading on fish oil.
Sure. Fish oil.
Fish oil is beneficial for pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It's beneficial for the baby's brain, mm-hmm. no question.
Maybe even additional DHA.
DHA.
Phosphatidylcholine.
And you say DHA. Well, that's something we want to avoid during a...
No, I meant DHA.
No, this is a trick question.
Oh.
What if we were to say to a woman, you know, you're having trouble getting pregnant, take some DHA.
Well, it is the substrate where all the other hormones are made.
Okay, so here's the deal. There are actually studies, and I would do this under the supervision of your doctor, prenatal specialist, although many of them are kind of square when it comes to these nutritional considerations. But DHEA apparently works as a fertility enhancer.
Wow.
Studies show that at doses that are pretty high, like 25 milligrams or 50 milligrams a day, or even 75, which is pretty high for a woman, can enhance fertility potential of the egg. So is this being used mainstream? Not a lot, but it is something that is worth considering. Now, the theoretical concern is what happens if you get pregnant and you're taking DHEA? Will it masculinize the baby? Well, if it's a boy, not so bad. But if it's a girl, will it change, you know, sex characteristics in the girl? And the answer is probably not, especially if you take it and you get a pregnancy test pretty quick and it says, you know, if you take it throughout the pregnancy, there is the potential to add male-like hormones to a female fetus, right? Mm. Theoretical consideration. But mm-hmm. This is, you know, for it, look, infertility is a terrible problem. And if you can use something natural to promote fertility that doesn't require very expensive IUI, IVF, you know, people go through tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of invasive treatments, lots of hormones, unnecessarily dangerous hormones, to get pregnant. This is a simple intervention.
There are a lot of reasons for infertility, too.
A lot of reasons.
Besides the bombardment of hormones or anything like that, PCOS
yes.
could be one, polycystic ovarian syndrome or ovary syndrome. Another could be celiac disease or autoimmune. Some kind of autoimmune disorder
yep.
where your ovaries aren't going to function where they should because they're under attack. Something.
Yeah, we have to really look at it. Mm-hmm. Good fertility specialists are now doing this. They're making sure that the women who are coming to them don't suffer from celiac disease because that's a real robber of fertility. So, you know, other things that hubby can start supercharging his sperm by taking some carnitine and coenzyme Q10. That actually helps sperm motility.
Mm-hmm.
Going easy on the booze.
Totally.
Please don't try to conceive on Super Bowl Sunday. It's very unlikely because I don't think any men are going to be having any relations with their women during the game. So it's probably a very safe time. So drink to your heart's content. Then get out of your system before you conceive. You know, there's a lot of considerations. And go to the podcast, please, because we talk in much greater detail about preconceptual planning. It's a huge, important area in natural medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's also, I think the nice thing about it is, like this person, I forget her name.
Alice,
it gets people to really reflect on their health and to take inventory of their lifestyle and their toxic exposures and their nutrient intake. And to really get serious about this, this is, you know, young people are, you know, maybe the first time that they're starting to think, hey, what I do, what I put in my mouth really has consequences beyond just, you know, will I have a little extra, you know, muffin top on my bikini.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's more, it's about, there's some real consequences to this. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up because we talked a lot about the questions that we had this week. And we invite questions, radioprogram@AOL.com. Please keep sending those questions because they're the grist for the mill for these weekly discussions. And
let's remind everyone of our upcoming lecture.
Yes, please.
On the War on Natural Medicine on Wednesday, February 26th. That's Wednesday, February 26th, the War on Natural Medicine. Dr. Hoffman and I are co-presenting. You must make a reservation, so please call 212-779-1744 to reserve your seat. We look forward to seeing you there.
That's at the Hoffman Center, which is located in Manhattan on 6th Avenue. With apologies to those of you who are listening to us in Dakar, Senegal. I don't know if you're going to make it, but I know
But maybe there's a webinar in your future.
Yes, we are exploring means of getting the word out in a variety of high-tech new ways, so there may be hope for you, those of you who live too far away, to experience us in the flesh. All right, thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you.
And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal. Or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening, and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.